Dr. David Bronstein can write books faster than I can read them. I don't know if you know about this guy, but he takes major topics in medicine, which means health. I don't know why we call it medicine anymore. Why do we call it? What's our mistake on that paradigm, okay? Okay. But, I mean, you know, if you take like thyroid, iodine, and all these other hormones, whatever, when you begin to realize that these topics can be addressed, can be simplified, can be understood, can be taken care of, we're not looking at the roots of the problems. We're looking at better band-aids. And then he actually goes deeper to the roots of the problem. So I'm not going to bore you with a lot of details. You can find all those out if you want. But he's been recognized as one of the major leaders, and I'll tell you why. Because he is. I take great pleasure in introducing my friend David Bronstein. Thank you, sir.
He asked me to tell you about my latest book. It's on ozone, Ozone the Miracle Therapy, which came out a couple of months ago. We're not talking about ozone today.
What's the next one coming?
Next one will be this summer on leaky gut.
There you go.
I do not have any financial interest of a product in my talk with any company offering grant monies for this continuing dental and medical education program. So I'm happy to be here. As always, this group puts on the best meetings. You know, whoever put this on should get a round of applause because it's, you know, another great meeting. So I will talk to you about iodine as an anti-cancer agent, which is what I was tasked to do today. Let me start off with a quote from Galileo, who said, "Facts which at first sight seem improbable will, even on scant explanation, drop the cloak which had hidden them and stand forth in naked and simple beauty." That's why we're all here today. Galileo ran into his own problems from going against the church at his time, and we run into our own problems. And, you know, as Boyd is running into his problems, you know, I feel like there's big shoes up here following him, and I don't quite feel like I'm filling them here. But after the last couple lectures, if my brain is starting to melt out of my ears, someone just bring me a bucket to collect a little bit of it. So these are my books, and I write a newsletter. And you know, people ask me, you know, how do you write them, and you know, how do you get them so quickly? I just write about what works in my practice, and I'll tell you. I've talked to you a little bit about iodine before. We haven't really talked about iodine and cancer, and that's what we'll focus on today. So here's another quote, and we'll find out how knowledgeable you are about great people in the world. "This lecture will be given with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind." So what's that quote from? Who said that quote? Jim Harbaugh, of course. That's for all you Michigan fans out there. And just in case there's any Notre Dame fans out there, Jim Harbaugh is looking for you next year when we resume the series. So Jim Harbaugh, of course, is the coach of the winningest college football team in the history of college football. Because I only have an hour, we can't talk too much about that, but we can do that afterwards if you want. So when I talk about iodine and cancer, one of the things that always comes up is breast cancer. 1 in 7 women have breast cancer across the United States. 1 in 3 men have prostate cancer. Thyroid cancer is the fastest growing cancer. We have epidemic increases of all the glandular cancers, pancreatic, ovarian, uterine, and prostate thrown into that. And I say that's all related to iodine deficiency. And one of the things I want to start with is the iodine deficiency continuum. In the glandular tissue, iodine is responsible, amongst other things, for maintaining the normal architecture of the glands. So if we call this the normal architecture of the glands, and iodine deficiency, the first thing that starts happening in all those glandular tissues is you get cysts. And if it goes on longer, the cysts become hard and nodular. If it goes on longer, they become hyperplastic, which is the precursor to cancer. The neat thing about iodine in animals, human, and test tube studies is iodine not only can stop that progression, it's been shown to reverse it. So, who was the fat man's, you know, the fat man's law? There were 13 fat man's laws. What did that come from? Fat man had 13 laws that you had to follow if you worked in the hospital under him as a resident. Nobody read House of God back in the day? Well, all of you need to read House of God. It's a great story about a doctor going through his residency. So I'm just going to just share with you a few of the Fat Man's laws. When the resident started his program, the Fat Man was a senior resident, and he gave them the laws and said, you have to follow these laws and everything will be okay. So Fat Man's law number 3 was, at a cardiac arrest, the first procedure is to take your own pulse. I think that's a good law to follow, and just to pass that on if you ever run into that. So iodine is an anti-cancer agent. In this talk, I'll show you that iodine has the ability to force cancer cells into apoptosis. Iodine in optimal dosing results in the production of iodolactones, which are responsible for forcing cancer cells into apoptosis. And iodine prevents hyperplasia of endocrine tissues, which is a precursor to cancer, as I said before. And iodine deficiency may explain the epidemic rise of endocrine and other common cancers we're suffering from. Just a little review on iodine and its deficiency. 1.9 billion individuals worldwide are estimated to have inadequate iodine nutrition. The WHO claims that iodine deficiency is the greatest single cause of preventable mental retardation. The WHO estimates there are 300 million school-aged children worldwide who are iodine deficient. It encompasses 36% of school-aged children. They estimate that over 30% of the world's population, over 2 billion people, have insufficient iodine intake, and that encompasses most of our country. So I'll show you. Over the half of the population of Europe lives in an area of iodine deficiency. That encompasses one-third of the world's population, 129 countries. There's decreased childhood survival rate in iodine deficient areas, and neonatal mortality has been shown to decline over 50% when iodine deficiency is rectified. Presently, 72% of the world's population is affected by iodine deficiency. I would expect that number to be higher. They probably haven't checked the other 28%. So iodine is a great substance to elevate the pH and to alkalinize the body, particularly when it's used with unrefined salt. Now, I'm focusing on iodine today. Iodine should be used as part of a holistic treatment regimen, just as the other lecturers said. It shouldn't be used as a standalone therapy. But particularly once used with unrefined salt, it's a great alkalinizing agent. Its deficiency causes intellectual deficiency, goiter, hypothyroidism, autoimmune thyroid illness, thyroid cancer, as well as other cancers. It's needed for the production of all the thyroid hormones. The 4, 3, 2, and 1 refer to how many iodine atoms are attached to that thyroglobulin molecule. And you can't produce any hormone in the body without iodine. Dr. Levy made a big point of saying, you know, how important it is to balance the hormones, you know, as you're following his recommendations. And Joe Hickey, David Goldstein, you know, my friends that I've seen in so many meetings, we would all agree that, you know, we've done this for a long enough time. It is important to keep the hormonal system and nutritional system balanced, you know, when we're doing mercury detox or whatever therapy you're doing. And iodine is responsible for the formation of the normal architecture of the gland tissue, as I started off with. It includes the breast, thyroid, ovaries, uterus, pancreas, prostate. So a little question mark next to the prostate because the studies haven't been as complete with the prostate, but in my experience, the same thing's happening. I can diagnose men with nodules or bumps on their prostate, put them on enough iodine, and many times those nodules and bumps will go away. And if you put them on enough iodine, the PSA will decline in those same men. So over the last 40 years, the government's own NHANES study found that iodine levels have declined over 50% in the United States. Now, during that same time, iodine levels have declined over 50% across our population. We've seen epidemic increases in all the thyroid problems: hypothyroidism, autoimmune, thyroid disease, and thyroid cancer. Thyroid cancer is the fastest growing cancer right now. Autoimmune thyroid illness going up at epidemic rates. Now, we all know a positive correlation does not equal causation, but a negative correlation disproves causation. Iodine can't be causing the autoimmune thyroid epidemic. It's iodine deficiency that's responsible for this. That was another talk I think I gave you guys, you know, a while ago, but I just wanted to reiterate that. But it's also responsible for, you know, one in seven women developing breast cancer, 1 in 3 men with prostate cancer, and the epidemic increases of all the other endocrine cancers that are out there. All those conditions can be caused by iodine deficiency. So different forms of iodine bind to different tissues of the body preferentially. The oxidized form, the iodine, has a preference for the breast, the prostate, and the stomach. The reduced form, with the extra electron in its outer shell, thyroid, salivary glands, and skin. Now, I talked to you before about the best way to get a whole body effect with iodine is to use a combination of iodine and iodide. Nothing's changed in my message. It's still the same with that. So iodine can inhibit thyroid cancer by three mechanisms. It produces this delta-iodolactone, which is an iodinated lipid that's been shown to be produced in the breast as well. Iodolactone and other iodinated lipids have anti-proliferative and apoptotic properties to cancer cells, and the high concentration of iodine can induce cell cycle apoptosis at G0, G1, and G2 phases of the cell cycle. And moderated iodine doses prevent the transformation from differentiated thyroid tumors into less differentiated tumors. This can all be inhibited by anti-thyroid medications like PTU that blow iodine out of the thyroid and out of the body. So, back to the fat man, his law number 10. And this is actually one of my favorites, because it could save you a lot of hassle when you're working in the hospitals or even in your office practice. If you don't take a temperature, you can't find a fever. So just, if you don't want to see it, don't take it. Anyways, no one seems to be enjoying this as much as me, but I just reread this book the last few weeks, and I was laughing, and you know, I figured I would show you the laws, but maybe this will be the last time I talk about the fat man's laws. So what's the link between breast cancer and thyroid cancer and iodine? Well, we know increased TSH induces hypertrophy of the thyroid gland, and we also know intrathyroidal iodine deficiency induces hyperplasia of the thyroid gland, which is a precursor to thyroid cancer. And I asked the question, is this the same picture that's in breast cancer? And the answer is yes. The breasts are the second major glandular storage site for iodine. Only the thyroid contains a higher concentration of iodine. And in an iodine deficient state, the breasts and the thyroid will compete for iodine. And iodine is concentrated in all the tissues of the body and all the cells of the body via a sodium iodine symporter. It's like a little taxi cab that moves iodine from the bloodstream into the cells or into the glands. And it's also been shown from research 30 to 40 years ago that diseased breasts will uptake more iodine than healthy breasts. Therefore, illnesses of the breast will require larger amounts of iodine. So, you know, I make a point of saying if you're going to use iodine in your practice and someone has a thyroid problem or a breast problem or a pancreatic problem, prostate problem, they're going to need more iodine than someone who doesn't have those problems. So this was a study from Bernard Eskin from 40 years ago, and he looked at the 24-hour radioiodine uptake measured in 57 normal and 8 fibrocystic breast disease patients. And you can see the normal patients compared to the fibrocystic breast disease were half the amount of iodine uptake when they injected a certain amount of radioactive iodine, showing that the breast tissue in the abnormal breast needed more iodine. It's the same principle as a magnesium loading test or the iodine loading test. The more you hang on to, perhaps the more your body needs. So Eskin concluded the higher uptake in abnormal breasts indicates a greater deficiency of iodine as compared to the normal breasts. We know iodine concentrates in the breast. It's secreted from the breast if there's enough iodine in the breast. And we know the breasts are one of the main storage sites for iodine in the body. And as I now said three times, normal breast architecture will not develop when there's iodine deficiency. You will get cysts, nodules, hyperplasia, and cancer if it goes on long enough. So there's a link between breast cancer and hypothyroidism. And the relationship has been reported for over 100 years. It was first reported in 1896 by an endocrinologist in the Netherlands. And since that time, there's been no consensus, but researchers feel there may be a link between hypothyroidism, predisposing one to getting breast cancer as well as other cancers. We know hypothyroidism can predispose to a poor immune system. We know hypothyroidism can alter other hormones, such as the adrenal, ovarian, pituitary, testicular hormones, and can set the stage for a poor immune system. However, over the last 30 years, there's been 3 studies that have shown an increased risk of breast cancer when one takes thyroid hormone. I've seen these studies come out. They've annoyed me when they come out because it doesn't never fit my model about, you know, I would think when you're hypothyroid, sure, your immune system's not going to work right. You're going to set the stage for bigger problems in the body, perhaps such as breast cancer. But why would these studies show the opposite? If you're taking thyroid hormone, you have an increased risk of breast cancer. And here's one of the studies. The incidence of breast cancer was reported to be higher in those that took thyroid hormone. They had an equal amount of control and treatment group. All they were looking at was the breast cancer incidence, and you can see it's about 2-fold higher in those taking thyroid hormone versus women not taking thyroid hormone. The second part of the study looked at how long they took thyroid hormone for. And what they found was that if you took thyroid hormone over 15 years, your incidence of breast cancer went up 50%. So, actually went up 100%. So the longer you took, the longer someone was on thyroid hormone, the bigger their increase of breast cancer. Now, I saw the study. There were two other ones similar to this. I tried to dissect them and say they were bad studies. One of them was a bad study. The other two were actually good studies, including this one. And, you know, I was scratching my head asking what could be the link between studies reporting that hypothyroidism increases the incidence of breast cancer and other studies that report that thyroid supplementation increases the incidence of breast cancer. So who's this gentleman? Carvo. So Carvo saved Clinton's re-election. And when Clinton was running for re-election, he was losing for a while. He brought in James Carvo to run his campaign, and there was a famous statement he made that turned the election around that Bill Clinton took hold of and ran with. Who remembers what he said? He said, "It's the economy, stupid." Well, when I was thinking about this iodine breast cancer link, it finally hit me. It's the iodine, dummy. You know, it's the iodine that could explain this. And the common link between the two is iodine. Over the last 40 years, our iodine levels have declined by more than 50%, according to the NHANES study. Breast cancer rates have risen dramatically. Thyroid illnesses have risen dramatically. So the use of thyroid hormones in the presence of iodine deficiency will exacerbate an iodine deficiency problem. If you give someone thyroid hormone who is iodine deficient, you're going to increase the body's metabolic needs. You're going to increase the body's need for iodine. You might be able to correct that elevated TSH, but you're going to cause other problems in the body. And, you know, it was interesting hearing the other speakers and hearing Dr. Haley talk about, you know, be careful, you know, what you wish for and be careful what you're using. But this would explain those two studies that I thought were well done that I really couldn't correlate with what I was seeing in my practice. So the first 10 years of my practice, I was putting people on thyroid hormone without using iodine before I learned about iodine. Once I learned about iodine and began using it correctly, my use of thyroid hormone is down over 50% from what I was using. And my dosing is down well over 50%. I went from having an average thyroid dose of probably 2 grains of desiccated thyroid the first 10 years to having an average thyroid dose now of 0.5 grain. And I went from having 2/3 of my patients on thyroid hormone to less than 1/3 right now. And that's the iodine effect. So, fibrocystic breast disease. They're cystic breasts, they're painful to touch, they're chronically inflamed and hardened. They feel like little grapes or big grapes, depending on how bad it is, you know, when you examine the breast tissue. And it's been shown to be a precursor to breast cancer. The causative factors in conventional thoughts are estrogen, too much estrogen, so they treat it with birth control pills, even though we know the birth control pill use increases breast cancer risk. There are dietary changes that can help, such as eliminating caffeine. And the reason it helps is because when you eliminate caffeine, someone who's drinking a lot of caffeine, the metabolic rate of the body will slow down a little bit. Therefore, they'll need a little bit less iodine. You can get them off trans fats. Sometimes that helps. I mean, dietary treatments don't help that much in a woman with severe fibrocystic breast disease. Sometimes vitamin E and vitamin A can also help this. However, the best treatment for it is iodine. An autopsy series reported in 1928 a 3% incidence of fibrocystic breast disease when they went back and looked at women's pathology slides. By 1973, there was an 89% incidence of fibrocystic breast disease when they examined a woman's breasts at death. So why was there such an enormous increase? And where has our government been studying this since 1 in 7 of our women are suffering from this illness, you know, suffering from breast cancer? And more are suffering from fibrocystic breast disease, but I guess they're too busy with Boyd Haley and getting rid of, you know, natural substances out there. So iodine has been the most researched element in treating fibrocystic breast disease over the last 100 years. It's extremely effective at treating fibrocystic breast disease. This was a study from the old Soviet Union where 167 patients were given 10 to 20 milligrams of iodine per day. What's the RDA for iodine? 150 micrograms, so this is 100 to 200 times the RDA for iodine. Within 3 months, 72% improvement noted in swelling, nodularity, pain, and diffuse induration of the breasts, and there were no side effects reported from that dose. Another study of 233 patients given 31 to 62 milligrams of Lugol's, 3% had iotism, which is a runny nose or watery eyes or something like that. It's nothing serious, but 70% had clinical improvement. I have multiple slides on this, and if I had more than an hour, I would go into this a little bit more, but I just limited it so I could get this talk in. So Mary Ann's an RN. She was in her 40s and came to see me. 2 weeks before, she had scheduled for bilateral mastectomy from severe fibrocystic breast disease. She had been going to the University of Michigan and to the fibrocystic breast clinic, seeing the chairman of the department. He had tried birth control pills, dietary changes, put her on antidepressants. Of course, that's what we do when we don't know what's wrong, right? Put them on antidepressants. None of it worked on her. She had an appointment scheduled for 2 weeks and saw me for a visit. And she had fibrocystic breast disease for over 15 years. She couldn't wear a bra. She was wearing, you know, these large, I don't know, what sweaters and things like that. Anything that touched her breast would bring her to tears. If she bumped into anybody or bumped into something, she'd break out into tears because they hurt so much. So when I saw her, she had read my iodine book and asked, could iodine help me? And I said, absolutely. I rarely see it fail for women with any fibrocystic breast disease, whether it's mild, moderate, or severe. And I asked her to delay her surgery, give me 6 months. She canceled the surgery, and we did. Now, remember, I did this as part of a holistic treatment regimen. I didn't just use iodine, but I did an iodine loading test where I gave her 50 milligrams of iodine at time zero, and I had her collect 24 hours of urine. She had 27% excretion when normally we expect over 90%. It's similar to that Eskin study with fibrocystic breasts where the body's hanging on to more iodine. She only excreted 27%. That means she held on to 73% instead of hanging on to 10% and getting rid of 90%. So I put her on 50 milligrams of iodine. I put her on, there was just a couple of nutrients she was low in. I didn't do that much with her besides the iodine. And I put her on 10 grams of unrefined salt a day. Unrefined salt is really important with any iodine therapy because it can help the body release fluoride and bromide that become displaced when you use iodine, and I'll get to that in a little bit. So within 3 weeks, all her symptoms improved. She, you know, called me up and said she feels like a new woman. She was telling me her pain was 80% better. Within 2 months, she had no pain. This was her thermoscan, and on top was her first thermoscan, and you can see on the left breast, there's a red spot. I can't point. Well, maybe I can do it with my... Can you guys see my pointer?
No.
All right. So on the left breast, there's a red spot. She was red as TH3 to TH4, possible breast cancer. She wasn't going to go through a mammogram because she said she couldn't stand getting her breasts smashed. And she didn't want any therapy for it because she said, I'm getting a bilateral mastectomy, you know, if this doesn't work. So you can see the serial thermoscans, that red spot goes away. And she went from a 3-4 to a TH1 about 6 months later. And the thermoscan measures the heat off the different areas of the body. And what you're looking for are cancer areas taking up more blood supply and having a warmer area than a non-cancerous area. And that's that red spot that's in her left breast. So an iodine deficiency state renders the rat breast susceptible to dysplasia and carcinoma. It's the same phenomenon we see in humans, and that's reversible with iodine. So iodine's been shown to induce apoptosis in thyrocytes and mammary cells, and they do this in the mitochondria. We've heard a lot about mitochondria from the last few lectures. And the organification of iron releases apoptotic proteins from tumor tissue and from extrathyroidal tissue, and you get the antiproliferative iodolactones, the iodinated lipids that form in the thyroid and the breasts when you give enough iodine. The RDA for iodine is not enough to form these iodinated lipids at 150 micrograms. You have to do milligram doses to get these things, to get these apoptotic iodinated lipid effects. This was another patient of mine. She's in her 80s, and she came to our office, saw me, and she felt a lump in her breast. And I palpated the lump, and it was 3 centimeters. I told her we should visualize this, and she said she didn't want any therapy, any conventional therapy. She would do anything holistic, she didn't want anything conventional. So she refused a mammogram, refused an ultrasound. I sent her for a thermoscan, and you can see this red spot. It's hard for me to look over there because it's at my parallel to me. But she was red as TH4 breast cancer. And I did a workup on her. Her iodine levels were 10, she had a 10% excretion instead of 90% on a loading test. Very low on iodine. I put her on iodine, salt, a couple of nutrients, it wasn't much. And these are the follow-up thermoscans, and the dates go from 2006, 6 months later, 6 months later, and 1 year later. And she, you can see in this later one, she's got the green in her breast tissue showing, you know, no signs of excess heat flow, and he read it as a TH1. He actually called me as this was happening, said, what are you doing with her? You know, I usually don't see this happen when it goes in, you know, goes the other way like this. So this is what we see in our practice with this. So rat models have clearly shown the connection between iodine and breast cancer. NMU and DMBA induced dysplasia and carcinogenesis in rats. And the presence of iodine in the diet can prevent the tumor formation when rats are given these substances. So when they're studying breast cancer, they have to make the rats deficient in iodine. If the rats are sufficient in iodine, they can't induce cancer in them. When iodine is removed from the diet, animals develop tumors at rates comparable to controls. So there's an iodine-estrogen connection to this. And when estrogen-responsive tumors are transplanted into mice, estrogen-responsive tumors had higher radioactive iodine uptakes in breast tissue as compared to estrogen-independent tumors. Iodine deficiency induces atypia in the breast, and the atypia is worsened when estrogen is added. So just as I said to you, put someone on thyroid hormone who's iodine deficient, you're going to increase the metabolic needs for iodine. Put a woman on estrogen who's iodine deficient, you're going to increase the iodine deficiency problem in her breasts and probably her ovaries and uterus and pancreas and the rest of the glandular tissue. Iodine has been shown to downregulate several estrogen-responsive genes responsible for the formation of lowered amounts of toxic estrogen metabolites like 4-hydroxyestradiol. And, you know, BRCA1, that's another big scam out there, this BRCA testing. You've read those studies are ridiculous. And we're wasting so much money testing women for, they're profitable, very profitable. So BRCA1 is a human gene responsible for tumor suppression. And when there's defects in BRCA1, the women are told that there is this enormous increased risk of breast cancer when we don't know what the risk is because they're hiding the data from us all. Anyways, BRCA1 produces proteins that repair damaged DNA, and therefore mutations in that gene can lead to increased risk of breast cancer. Iodine has been shown to decrease inhibition of BRCA1. So if any woman, you know, if they scare them and tell them they should get this testing so their families know, I tell them don't get the testing. It's useless. But if they get it and they have it, one of the things you can offer them is you should take iodine. So either through the interactions with estrogen or through estrogen-independent mechanisms, the combination of iodine and iodide seem to have a positive impact on different genes involved in cell cycle growth and cell cycle differentiation, as I show there. So last time I was here, or the time before, I went through that mechanism of how does iodine get into the cell, in the thyroid cell, and how does it make thyroid hormone? Well, the same mechanism has happened in breast tissue. Now, it hasn't been studied in the prostate, it hasn't been studied in the pancreas and ovaries, uterus, but I'm sure it's the same exact mechanism. And here it is in the breast tissue. So you can see iodine there on the left, outside of the cell. And iodine has to be transported over the cell membrane into the breast tissue via the sodium iodine symporter. That's the NIS, the little taxi cab in yellow. Now, sodium iodine symporter is produced from two hormones, prolactin and oxytocin. So perhaps some of the benefits of oxytocin therapy come from this, where women can utilize iodine. I don't really buy into that, but I think what's happening is the human body's not stupid. It's not going to have these symporters sitting there if there's no iodine to move into the tissue. However, if you start taking iodine, it should start producing this, and oxytocin levels will naturally go up with it. So iodine's moved across the cell. It has to undergo oxidation via lactoperoxidase into thyroid hormone. And you can produce locally thyroid hormone in the breast tissue, you know, monoiodothyrosine and dye, you know, with one and two atoms of iodine attached to the thyroglobulin molecule. When it undergoes organification at the right dose, that's where you get the iodolactones and the iodinated lipids that actually protect the cells and can make cancer cells into apoptotic cells. and programmed cell death can occur. However, that last step, that iodinated lipid step down there, can only occur at 100 times the RDA for iodine. So that's about 15 milligrams of iodine, the minimum dose. My experience has been for women with breast problems, men with prostate problems, anyone with thyroid problems, the RDA for iodine, you're not, number one, you're not going to make any of these iodinated lipids, but they need more than the woman or man without those problems. So how much do they need? I guess it depends on how severe they are. I would say if they have pathology of those tissues, at least 50 milligrams, maybe 100 milligrams, maybe hundreds of milligrams. I can tell you one thing, if they can take 12 milligrams of iodine, they can take 200 milligrams, they can take a gram of iodine. That's usually not the issue is when you first start it, are their detox pathways well enough to be able to release the bromide and fluoride without making them sick or not? If they can take any amount of milligrams, they can usually tolerate higher doses without problems. So here's the formula for iodolactone. Now you need arachidonic acid in that formula. You need thyroperoxidase to catalyze that reaction. And the combination of that with thyroperoxidase as the enzyme catalase, you can form delta iodolactone. As I've said before, it's the key regulator of apoptosis and cellular proliferation in the thyroid. Delta iodolactone is not detected in human tissue when iodine deficiency is present, but is present with iodine administration at a minimum of 100 times the RDA for iodine. So does iodine inhibit other cancers? 12 human cancer cell lines were studied here, one non-malignant cell line. The cells were exposed to 10 micromolar of iodine culture for 2 days. One of the problems with the iodine studies, nobody knows the difference between iodine and iodide. Nobody knows 10 micromolars of iodine. What does that mean? It's ridiculous that they report it this way, but I don't know. Either they report it that way to keep us in the dark so we don't use this stuff, or I don't know why they can't make it so we can understand it, but I'll make it so you can understand it. So because we know the molecular weight of iodine, because we know the renal clearance of iodine, which is 42.5 liters per day, we can go back to our inorganic chemistry and plug in the numbers and figure out what kind of dosing of iodine are we talking about here. So I've showed you here on the bottom the formula for it. 127 milligrams per liter is the molecular weight of iodine, and 42.5 is the renal clearance of iodine. It's about 50 milligrams per day. That's a good dose. I say that's a minimum dose for someone with a cancer that you're trying to help them with iodine with. A minimum dose. And here's what they found. Glioblastoma inhibited, melanoma inhibited, pancreatic cancer down 31%. I got the stars on lung and colon carcinoma. They were inhibited, but they didn't meet statistical significances. The other ones did. So the authors summarized it by, this research further substantiates the potential anti-tumor properties of molecular iodine and of iodolactones in breast cancer and provides first evidence that this strategy may be extended to further human cancers. Of course, this study was done in 2009, and there's been nothing since then in any of this stuff. At least I haven't found it. In vivo and in vitro models of cancer of iodine show that it delays tumor progression, inhibits cell proliferation, and induces apoptosis. So the therapeutic use of iodine in treating breast cancer was first reported in 1896, and its direct relationship between breast cancer and iodine deficiency was looked at when they compared two populations, Japan and Iceland, who both had higher intake of iodine and lower incidence of breast cancer. When they compared them to US, Mexico, and Thailand, lower intake of iodine and higher incidence of breast cancer. Now, this is one of those associations does not equal causation. We should make you think a little bit. It gets a little bit more interesting. Poland, Switzerland, Australia, and Russia found to have elevated rates of breast cancer associated with localized pockets of iodine deficiency. They've also shown the same thing in the U.S. in the Great Lakes area, where I'm from, which we have the lowest iodine levels in our soil of any area of the country, and one of the highest breast cancer rates. That gives you a little more ammunition. Maybe this association does equal causation. Researchers using a tumor induction model found that if iodine supplements are removed from the diet at 4 or 18 weeks from newborn rats, latent mammary cancers progress to overt cancers. If iodine treatment is maintained for more than 40 weeks, the antineoplastic effect of iodine is permanent. So, as I said before, when I talked to you about iodine and the thyroid, there's an association with low IQ in kids whose mothers are deficient in iodine. If my numbers are right, over 97% of us deficient in iodine, that could explain why we're having all these problems in our schools and you know, with our children. So these women need to be treated with iodine before they become pregnant. So mainland Japanese ingest 100 times the RDA for iodine. Coastal Japanese ingest more. Much of their iodine comes from seaweed, where they use seaweed as part of their fertilizer on their plants, and they eat it. So what's the effect of ingesting over 100 times the RDA for iodine? Markedly lower rates of all the endocrine cancers and significantly lower rates of fibrocystic breast disease. And, of course, that brings up Fat Man's Law number 12. If the radiology resident and the medical student both see a lesion on the chest x-ray, there can be no lesion there. Finally. Here's the breast cancer rates, Japan, the U.S., and the U.K. U.K. also has similar iodine levels as our own. And what lends more credence to this, perhaps this association equals causation, is researchers have shown Japanese women who move to the U.S. have higher mortality rates of breast and endometrial and ovarian cancer as compared to mainland Japanese. And certainly lowered iodine levels could explain the observation. So bromide's a competitive inhibitor of iodine. It's in the periodic table. In the halide group 17, one halide can competitively inhibit another halide. There's no known therapeutic value of bromide in our body. And bromide comes from, it's a fire retardant. Your feet are on it, on the carpet. It's in these tablecloths. It's in the walls that they're moving back and forth. It's in our automobiles, and it's in our food and drink, unfortunately. My testing has shown everybody's got high bromide levels. And because of our bromide exposure has gone up over the last 40 years, our iodine requirements have gone up. We need more iodine than our predecessors did because of this. And I think that could explain, again, this epidemic increase of breast, thyroid, ovarian, uterine, pancreatic problems that we're seeing. So can bromide cause breast cancer? This was a study I did at my office. 18 female patients. I randomly selected them. And 9 with breast cancer, 9 without breast cancer. And this is when I was first learning about iodine. And I measured their levels of fluoride, bromide, and iodine at time zero. I gave them 50 milligrams of iodine to take the next day. And then I had them take 50 milligrams a day for 30 days. And when I looked at the results, here were the bromide results. So you can see the breast cancer patients about twofold higher than the non-breast cancer patients. I'm going to show you one of the women who are in this study, you know, a very interesting part of her story with this. This is another study by Eskin done, you know, 40 years ago. 98 women, 20 with breast cancer were studied, and what they found was their iodine levels were 40% lower in the women, they were 40% higher in the women without breast cancer compared to the women with breast cancer. Now, I say the same thing is happening with iodine in the prostate, although the research isn't quite as complete. But mainland Japanese men have significantly lower prostate cancer, tenfold lower as compared to U.S. men. And when they move to the U.S., they have a higher rate of prostate cancer as compared to mainland Japanese. And the longer they live here, the more their numbers start to mimic our own numbers. And I say the common link is iodine deficiency. So both non-cancerous and cancerous prostate cells were found to reactivate proliferation when iodine was withdrawn in this study. This could explain the epidemiologic reports showing the difference in cancer rates when Asian men changed their diet from iodine-rich to iodine-poor and moved here. And we certainly have an iodine-poor diet. So both iodine and iodide are effective in preventing prostate hyperplasia. Now, the prostate gland, I showed you in that first slide, you know, on one side of it, but other studies have shown it can take up both iodine and iodide. And both chemical forms are effective at preventing the prostate hyperplasia induced by high concentrations of testosterone and estrogen in rats. Again, if you're going to give them a hormone, you're going to increase their body's metabolic needs for iodine. You're going to make iodine deficiency worse. So the antiproliferative effects of iodine and 6-iodolactone were dose-dependent, meaning the higher iodine was needed to make the 6-iodolactone. Iodine supplementation impaired the growth of cancer cells in nude mice, and the author summarized it by saying the anti-proliferative and apoptotic effects of 6-iodolactone on prostate cancer cells are consistent with those reported in other tumoral cells such as thyroid, breast, neuroblastoma, and pancreas. So high iodine intake, 345 micrograms per day, so that's two times the RDA for iodine. The highest tertile was found to have a reduced risk of prostate cancer of 29%. And the history of thyroid disease associated with a, so if you have thyroid disease, there's a 2.3-fold increased risk of prostate cancer. And as long, and if you increase the time from diagnosis of thyroid disease to over 10 years, now it goes up to 3.4-fold increased prostate cancer. Very similar to that breast cancer thyroid problem I showed you before. It's the same phenomenon. So thyroid cancer is the fastest growing cancer. I say it's related from iodine deficiency. So iodine supplementation prevents the transformation from differentiated thyroid tumor into less differentiated thyroid tumor. Iodine has apoptotic effects in follicular, papillary, and anaplastic thyroid cancer cell lines, and it requires the oxidation of iodide to iodine via thyroperoxidase. Same mechanism I showed you before. The authors say there's little doubt that increasing dietary iodine intake will limit goiter and thyroid nodule formation, the formation of differentiated thyroid cancer, and possible further de-differentiation to anaplastic thyroid carcinoma. So this was in the Thyroid Journal. Show me an endocrinologist that's using iodine. How much time do I have left? 31% increased risk of prostate cancer following a diagnosis of thyroid cancer, 21% increased risk of thyroid cancer following a diagnosis of prostate cancer. So they're related to one another. And again, this sort of harks back to, if you're going to balance the hormones, make sure they have enough iodine before you balance the hormones. Number one, you'll be able to use a lot less hormones to balance them if they need them in the first place. So what concentration of iodine was used to express the anti-apoptotic protein, BCL-XL, 100 micromolars. So how much iodine do you require to reach that? It's going back again, doing our calculations, and it's 500 milligrams a day. I do have patients on this dose. These are usually stage 4 cancer patients. I'm going to talk to you about one of them coming up. So there are chemicals that can cause thyroid problem, thyroid cancer problems and other cancer problems. I mean, they're shown here, but these are all more toxic when iodine deficiency is present. So animal research has been clear that in an iodine deficiency state, animal breast tissue will show signs of developing breast cancer. That includes hyperplastic changes. And Eskin wrote, it thus appears that maintenance of the optimal structure and function of the breast requires the presence of continuous and specific amounts of iodine. He wrote that 45 years ago. If you stop taking iodine, if you get them iodine sufficient, and you start off iodine deficient, take iodine, now they're iodine sufficient, if you stop it, you ain't going to stop the exposure to fluoride and bromide that's ubiquitous in our environment. They're just going to become iodine deficient again. This needs to go on until we decide to leave the earth. So dimethyl benzanthracene can induce breast cancer in rats. Iodine supplementation has a suppressive effect on tumor growth and formation. And there's an enhanced suppressive effect when progesterone is added to iodine. So I do use bioidentical hormones in my practice. First thing I do is get their iodine levels situated. And suppressed tumors have significantly higher iodine content. So how much iodine should you take? The iodine loading test is the best test. It's a 24-hour urinary test. You take 50 milligrams of iodine at time zero, and you collect 24 hours of urine. It's shown here. I have more instructions in my book if you want on that. And through various studies over the years, my mentor in iodine, Dr. Abraham, developed this graph. And I still think he should have got a Nobel Prize for this graph, because it shows on the x-axis the daily iodine intake in logarithmic scale down here. Down there. On the y-axis, which is right here, I can't even see if my pointer's making it there, but it's going up on the left side. Right, I can't see it. On the y-axis is a 24-hour radioactive iodine uptake by the thyroid. Now, in medicine, we do these radioactive iodine uptake tests where we inject a known amount of radioactive iodine intravenously, and we measure how much iodine is taken up by the thyroid gland. 12 to 32% of radioactive iodine uptake is reported as normal in the thyroid gland. Well, I told you the story before that I remember as a med student sitting there reading radioactive iodine uptake tests with a radiologist, and he's in the middle of reading these tests, and he's reporting the percent uptake. And I said to him, well, why is 12 to 32% normal? Shouldn't it be zero? And he says, well, why should it be zero? Now, back then, I was not a holistic doctor. I was just thinking. I was just a thinking conventional medical student. And he said, well, why should it be zero? And I said, well, if there's a nuclear attack, they're going to give us iodine tablets to saturate our thyroid with iodine so the radioactive iodine doesn't bind to our thyroid and, you know, the rest of the tissues, and it'll pass right through. So if we have iodine receptors in our thyroid, shouldn't there be iodine there to take up that spot? And he said, well, 12 to 32% is normal. So he reads a few more, and I interrupt him again, and I ask him, I don't understand that. I think it should be zero. And he said, no, 12 to 32% is normal. He goes back to reading them, and I asked him a third time. He says, don't ask me again. And I didn't ask him again, and I forgot about it until I learned about iodine. So 12 to 32% is normal. That shows us the normals are deficient in iodine. It should be zero. So if you look at this graph, you cannot see my pointer here?
No.
Oh, I just gave it to you. If you look at my graph, that line starting on the top left goes down to the bottom right, and that's the daily iodine intake. So as you give more iodine, the radioactive iodine intake goes down. And just as you would expect, you're binding more iodine to the thyroid and the breast, and, you know, radioactive iodine will not bind to those areas. On the z-axis, which is that line going up to the right, it's the amount retained by the thyroid. So the thyroid can only take in 600 micrograms of iodine per day. So if we look at the daily iodine intake, that line starting on the bottom left moving up to the top right, as the daily iodine intake goes up, it maxes out at 600 micrograms per day. So where do you want to be on this graph? The RDA for iodine is way to the left of this. It's right over there and over there. This is 50 milligrams, is 400 times the RDA for iodine. That would be the end of that red line. The other side of that circle is 100 milligrams, which would be, you know, another twofold times the RDA for iodine. Clearly, the RDA is not enough to saturate our thyroid with iodine, nor is it enough to decrease radioactive iodine uptake by the thyroid. So I say, if they don't have diseased tissues, perhaps 25 milligrams a day. If they got diseased tissues, more. And with our toxic world, probably 25 to 50 milligrams for most of us, and more if they have diseased tissues. So the summary of iodine's anti-cancer effects are: it regulates the apoptotic gene expression of iota lipids. It acts as a potent antioxidant. In fact, it's one of the most potent antioxidants we know of. It's inhibiting the eicosanoid pathway, which is one of the least studied pathways, but it inhibits lipoxyoxygenase, which has been shown to decrease proliferative and or apoptotic lipid signaling. An interesting case. This was one of the ladies in my 9 breast cancer, non-breast cancer patient studies. She was a 70-year-old female diagnosed with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer, the worst type. She was given 2 to 4 months to live at diagnosis. She declined all the conventional treatments, came to me with that diagnosis in hand, and I did my workup on her. And I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to use iodine at that time. So I treated her with a nutritional approach, vitamins. You know, I did a holistic workup on her. I used corrected vitamin and mineral deficits, herbs, and I balanced her hormones with bioidentical hormones. And she's still alive 2.5 years later. I learned about iodine. I put her in that study, that 9 and 9 study.